Sorry, don't have a bulletin today. This could relieve somebody from all the work, you know, this week. And but I think that we can do without the bulletin, just for a change. And actually, the topic and the theme I like to share with you today, and since you don't have the bulletin, I'll put it down in paper. It will be in two parts. The first part that I'm going to share with you is can you see? Can you all read? Any of you have not heard of this term before? Achilles heel. Any of you haven't heard of that before? Can you raise your hand? Okay. I'll tell you to give you a little story because this is under the main idea that I want to share with you. Any of you have heard a famous writer called Homer, H-O-M-E-R, Homer. He is a well-known writer who wrote one of the earliest books in the world called Iliad. So Homer's Iliad, I-L-L-I-A-D, is a very well-known book in history. It dated almost as far, let's say not quite, but almost as far as the Bible. And people were talking about the reliability of the Bible. Sometimes they used the Book of Iliad as a comparison. Homer tells a story about the city of Troy, what happened to it and so forth. Have you heard of the Trojan horse? Okay. So he wrote this book called Iliad, which in their language means poems. And in that book, he tells story of the city of Troy, how it fell, talk about the Trojan horse and so forth. But one particular personality he talked about in the book is called Achilles. He's a person. He's a person we consider in mythology because Greek has a lot of mythology. Okay. So he told about the story of this person called Achilles, how he came about. Well, how does this term come about? And this is frequently used nowadays in English language for describe the condition, certain situation. This term is frequently used now. Now, when Achilles was a baby, you know what his mother did? His mother helped him up by his heel with two fingers, one on, you know, two on each heel. And she dipped him in a river. Supposedly, by mythology, it goes that because he was dipped in this special water in this river, he is going to be protected, that he will not be injured or hurt because he's invincible. Nobody can hurt him. However, in order to hold him in the river, his mother has to hold on to something, right? So the mother was holding on to the two heels of this baby, and it dips him in the water. But you know what? In order to hold the heel, this two finger has to touch the heel to hold on to that person, right? So these two spots in the heels of Achilles has no contact with water. Now, because of that, Achilles is protected completely, the whole person. He cannot be injured in any fight, anything, except for the two spots in his heel. Because why? Because it has not been protected or exposed to the water. You understand what I'm saying? So from then on, Well, there's a story that goes about him. You know, Homer told about the story how he involved in a lot of activity, but he never get killed or injured because he was protected. And later mythology also went after Homer's time, I believe, they said that he finally was killed because he was hit by an arrow at the heel. Now, this term Achilles' heel then is being used now in history as a way of describing the fact that if a person has Achilles' heel, that means he has or she has weaknesses in his life, which can be prone to serious problem. It can be hurt, can be injured, or even can be fatal. So if somebody said, this person Achilles' heels, and so forth, list of things, that means those are things that the person will be prone to because those are that person's weakness. Now today I'm going to share with you a few personality in the Old Testament. And I want to kind of share with you also my impression that they also have their Achilles heels. All of us have our Achilles heels. Now, the Achilles heels can be a list of things. It represents the weakness in our personality because we are sinners. So everybody has Achilles heels in their life, one way or the other. An important personality in the Old Testament I'm going to share with you, they also have the Achilles heel. Because why the Bible said there's no perfect person in this world. Everybody is a sinner, no matter how spiritual you are, how well trained you are. The thing that came to me in my mind is that, you know, sometimes we don't even know the list of the that is under the Achilles heel in our own life. Why? Because sometimes we are not conscious of it. Psychology talk about conscience and the subconscious. There are things that we are all aware that we are weak in. But there are also things that sometimes we don't know that we are weak in. So other people may see it in us, but we may not know. But you know, there are only two spiritual beings that know everything about us. They know every part of our Achilles heel. You know who they are? The first person who knows all about us and our Achilles heels is God, because he created us. The Bible said he even knows things that we don't know about ourselves. You know, but the difficult part is this, you know what? Who is the other spiritual person, you know, spirit that know about us? And that is Satan, the devil, Satan. Satan who tempted Adam and Eve. Satan who tempted and put a lot of people, you know, down. Because why? Besides God, Satan is the only spiritual personality that know everything about our spirit, our Achilles heel. That is why we are so vulnerable to temptation, to attack by Satan, because we all have our weakness, and only God and Satan know everything about it. So God is one side, helping us, protecting us. Satan is on the other side, attacking us all the time. And that is why the Bible said we live in a spiritual war. We're not just living in a physical world. We also have a spiritual war we have to deal with. Yeah. For some of you, you still don't really understand or don't kind of feel of this because it's in the English terminology. I would say that in Chinese, maybe I can say that this represents every person. Tong jiao. Is that what you see, ma? Tong jiao. Tong jiao. 当然我知道你的痛脚是什么，我就 attack 你，我就，啊，这个痛脚 represent a lot of things, right? It represent our weakness. You attack that person. If you really want to attack person, you have to know that person 痛脚在哪里. That is basically the idea I want to put in your mind and I share with you further. Okay. But there's another, the other part of my sharing today I want to share with you is about faith. About faith. Can you all read? It's about faith. Faith, Guinness Book of Record. You know what Guinness Book of Record means? Anybody not familiar with Guinness Book of Record? It is a book that we label that report things that are the most unusual in this world. For example, you know, they record the person who lived up to what, 130 years old, or somebody, you know, it's you know, a book of achievement only belong to a few. Only those who can achieve it the highest can go into that record. But the Bible also gives us the impression of a book. Now, we don't know who the author of this book is, but Hebrews chapter 11 is considered, from a Christian standpoint, consider the book, a Guinness Book of Record for the faithful. If you have time, you can turn, you can slip it over because we're going to that a little bit later today. And it's Hebrews chapter 11. He gave a list of names of the people that was in God's favor because of their faith. Now, within this Guinness Book of Record, there are four names that I'd like to share with you. I like to trace back to the Old Testament time, and I give you four personalities I want to share with you today. The first one I'd like to share with you is Abraham. Everybody know about Abraham, okay? When Abraham was 75 years old, God called him from a place called Ur. And he called Abraham, he said that, I'd like to have you started for a nation in my name. And I want to be call you to be the father of nation that will be as many as the stars in the sky and sand on the earth. And then they are descriptive terms. They say that you will have great nation of people after you. And then you're going to be the father of all of them. So he called Abraham out of a pagan religion, pagan surrounding. And then he called Abraham. He said, I want you to go to Canaan, the Palestinian area. I want you to go over there because there is where you're going to be able to, that you're going to be starting your nation. This nation that we are called my nation, my people. Now, for us, it's really difficult to understand in a way because the Bible said nobody has ever seen God in their life, no matter from the very beginning. Man, nobody has actually seen God. So how did God communicate with those people at that time? I think probably God communicated in Abraham in terms of voice or maybe in terms of some vision or phenomena. You know, the Old Testament people have the advantage that they can hear directly from God. They can hear God's voice. But none of them actually saw God face to face. But God used the voice and maybe you see this certain phenomena. And particularly for the Jews, he used a lot of miracle to get in contact with them as a way of transmitting the message to them. They don't have the Bible like we do. None of us have seen God, but in Old Testament time, none of them have seen God either. But God was able to communicate with them directly through different means. So Abraham was one of them that God was able to relate to him and talk to him and said, I'm going to choose you. You are going to be the beginning of great nation. Because why? Because God already in mind, since the fall of Adam and Eve, he already has his mind to start a nation on this earth, to build up this nation that belongs to him in getting ready for eternal kingdom. And Abraham was chosen as the first one to start a nation. So Abram traveled a long way from Ur all the way Middle East area. They traveled to the Palestine, and so forth. And the book talk about his life. And Abraham, because he has faith in this God that revealed to him, he didn't know where he was going. But God just asked him, you just go. I will lead you the way on the way. So this is considered one of the strong point of Abraham because he has faith in this God that he believed in at that time. But the thing I'd like to share with you is that, including Abraham and a few others I share with you, all of them have their Achilles heel. What I consider Abraham Achilles heel, I can only thought about a few, which I just want to share with you. But in spite of that, God still call him that he has faith in him. And the chapter 11 of Hebrews spent quite a few verses just talking about him. He occupied most of that chapter. He's the most important person because of his faith. But you know, Abraham has had his Achilles heel, and I share with a few episodes of his life that represent his weakness in his life. First of all, if you read the book of Genesis, there is still twice during his time that he lied. I believe his Achilles heel is that Abraham frequently, maybe he felt that God gave me wisdom. He gave me idea in my mind. So I thought of something which I thought is logical to do, then I will do it. He more or less overriding God's plan in his life by doing that, by not fully trusting in God enough during those moments. Twice he went through the area. First time he went through a place and where he met the king of that area. And second time he went to Egypt, he met Pharaoh. You know, when Abraham, even though he was 75 years old and Sarah was only a few years younger than he was, the Bible said at that time Sarah was a very beautiful woman. People lived much longer in those days. So 70 and 70 doesn't matter. They still look good when he was in the 70s. And so these two times, Abraham was traveling with Sarah through this place, and the king there met them. And Abraham was afraid to tell the king that this is my wife, because then he might be in danger. His life would be in danger in those days, you know. People did things differently. You know, you're traveling through, coming through the country, with wife, see this beautiful woman, maybe this is your wife, I may just kill you so I can get her, right? The king has the power to do that. The Pharaoh of Egypt happened the same thing. Abraham went passed through, and then the Pharaoh met Abraham and Sarah too. You know, both times, how Abraham handled the situation, he told them, oh, this is my sister. He didn't say, well, this is my wife. He introduced Sarah. This is my sister. Now, in a way, the theologians say, well, maybe he is telling half lie because Sarah is actually a half sister of Abraham. But still, in actual fact, Abraham tried to save his own skin. So he said, this is my sister. In a way, he will not be in danger. But you know, God intervened both times. God intervened at the time of the king and the time of Pharaoh, and they both scolded Abraham. In fact, they said that, why did you tell the lie? Why did you tell me this is not your wife, this is your sister? In other words, God give fear to those people that they won't be harmed. But that is some aspect of Abraham Achilles' heels that I can think of. But then I think one of the very, very big mistakes that Abraham made in his life that affect the rest of the human world is when? It's about what? God said, you're going to have a great nation. You're going to have millions and millions, trillions of people that are going to be following you. This will be called my nation. You're going to be the father of them. You started this. But in order to do that, you have, by Jewish tradition, you have to have a male descendant in order to spread, you know, continue your generation. So God said, you know, I'll provide you, you know, that you're going to have a son so that you can continue with the genealogy, you know, that you can have this descendant. Abraham was 75 years old when he heard about that promise. When he was 85, 10 years later, he lost his trust in the sense that now I've been waiting 10 years now, I'm 85, how long I have to wait before I can have a son? And Sarah, his wife, said, you know, God doesn't necessarily mean that you have to make the generation through me. You know, we have a mate here. Why don't you, you know, you know, marry her as a concubine, and then she will bear you a son. Then you have, you know, the generation going. Somehow Abraham was persuaded easily at that time. You know, this kind of husband and wife relationship sometimes is not easy to understand, but Abraham thought the idea was good then, because, you know, why not? God did not say that it has to come through the line of Sarah, right? It can come through something along. It's coming through me. So when he was 85 years old, he took this girl, and then he has a child by the name of Ishmael. And that was a year later, and he was, of course, Abraham about 86 at that time. But you know what, even though the Bible did not give us that kind of impression, but I think by speculation and by the general trend, we have an idea that because Abraham chose this route, God was not happy. And the family has problem. They have jealousy. Sarah afterwards, they get jealous and want to get rid of this, you know, because now this person, you know, this servant has, this slave has a child, and now it's more important than I was. So there was a lot of conflict, disruption in the family because of that. And then later they were sent away. But God still protected Ishmael because that is, you know, God's plan. But you know what? Theologians believe that Ishmael represents all the Arabs of the day. All the descendants become the Arabs of the day. God chose Isaac as the generation that he wanted to bless and the promise that he has in mind. Isaac, not Ishmael. If you think about the conflict between the Jews and the Arabs, I think maybe you can say that this is a very, very long-term consequences of what Abraham did in his life. Because of this action he took, now you have this conflict that started from the very beginning of history until now. It becomes something that occupies the daily news all the time, the conflict between the Jews and the Arabs. This I consider is one of Abraham's Achilles' heel. The second person I like to share with you is Joseph. I try to follow the timeline. At first, I'm going to leave Joseph last, but I'm going to follow the timeline. Because Joseph came next in the line of history. Abraham lived about 2100 BC, okay? This is about 4,000 years ago. And Joseph is about, when Joseph lived, understand, is about 1800 or so BC. So Joseph is the next person I want to share with and about his Achilles heel. Well, it's a paradox because the last couple of times I shared with you, I want to use Joseph's life as a model of our living, remember? He is so good and he trusted God. God revealed to him through dreams. His contact with God is mainly through dreams. And somehow he feels God's presence. So from when he was 17, he went on as a slave, went to Egypt. He was trained, he was brought up, he became very mature. He was hired by Pharaoh at that time. I think Pharaoh at that time may be even younger than him, because somewhere in the passage it said Joseph treated Pharaoh as if, you know, he was his father, his Pharaoh's father, protecting him, helping him. Joseph was 30 years old. Remember when he became the head of Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. He went through prison for 12 years or so. But he persists. He persevered. He was very good. He was very successful in his life. So Pharaoh gave him the whole Egypt to take care of. His dream about seven good years, led to a very, very powerful time during his rule, because they have the resources other country they didn't have in the Middle East. So he was in power. God uses him as a way of continuing his choice for the nation of Israel. This is the beginning, see, because his family was preserved. Jacob, who later name got changed to Israel, is the starting of the Israel, nation of Israel, and his 12 sons become the 12 tribes, as you know. But Joseph himself is not along the line in terms of this tracing, this genealogy of importance for that. But he became a very significant instrument for God to work in his plan. So his family, his father, and his 11 brothers were saved. They moved to Egypt from Canaan because of the famine, and then the history continued there. So the last two times I shared with you about Joseph, we learned a lot from his life, how we can learn about his humility, about his principle, his ethic, about trusting God. But you know, not many people or not many sermons that I know of that preach about Joseph's weakness or his Achilles heel. I'd like you to read some Bible, part of the Bible with me in the book of Genesis. If you bring your Bible up to the book of Genesis, this is something that I feel are very significant. It's part of God's plan for his nation, but this is a thing I think happened because of Joseph's over-enthusiasm, his power of managing things, and it has some consequences. Let's turn to Genesis. Remember, because the Pharaoh and Joseph, under Joseph and his plan, they are so powerful. During those 7 rich years, they conserve 1/5 of the crops and store them away. And so during those 7 year of famine, they have so much, while other nations around there, including the people in Egypt, they didn't have enough. So they have to buy what they didn't have. So at first, they have to buy whatever money or resources they have to get crops so that they can eat, because the fields are not producing anymore. And then later, they ran out of money. They don't have any money anymore. The Bible here tells us that they start trading their livestock, their cows, their goat, their sheep, everything. They trade them so that they can buy the crops to eat, to survive. And after that, he said that, if you continue to read in the chapter, chapter 47, okay, you glance through chapter, that's the part of chapter 47 in Genesis. So they said, now they ran out of cows, they ran out of goat, they ran out of sheep, they don't have any more livestock to trade for the crop so they can have put food on the table. They start selling the land. They start selling the land to eat to Pharaoh through Joseph. And before long, you know, 7 years, I guess, it's pretty hard to go by without any significant resources. So they ran out of their land too. They sold all the land they don't have. Can you remind you something about the economy of today? You know. So what did they do? So Joseph said, well, you can sell yourself. You can become our slaves. You work for us. Now, Jew, you know, slavery actually existed before Joseph's time. But the Jewish mindset at that time is like that. If you're completely out of any more resources, you have a son or daughter, you can put your son or daughter under a slavery type of arrangement so that you don't have to pay your debt. You just use your son and daughter as a way of paying debt to work for somebody else you owe. That you owe. Now, at that time, Joseph get to the point that the Egyptian, a lot of the Egyptian, they already out of their land. So he says, okay, we'll work for you. You're as a slave. You become your slave. You become our master. You know, so we can give us food and we work for you. We are willing to work for food. Okay. So this is the mindset. And read verse 21, chapter 47, 21. And Joseph reduced the people to servitude. This is in NIV translation. From one end of Egypt to the other. This word servitude really gives the impression that means that you are living like slave. When you are in servitude, you don't have freedom. You work for somebody because you need to. So we can give idea that the slavery in Egypt at that time started around this time. So from then on, the Egyptian was working for the government, for the Pharaoh. Now Egypt lived quite a few more years after that. He was in charge. So the slavery system already started in Egypt at that time. And it continued for the next few hundred years. It affects not only the Egyptian, it affects all the Jews, all those descendants of Abraham, because they live in Egypt. And the first chapter of Exodus told us, in chapter 1, verse 8, it said, then a new king who did not know about Joseph came to power in Egypt. Now, yeah, the division now, between Egyptian or the Jews now. Even under slavery system, you still have different castes. The original inhabitant, the Egyptian, they still have the privilege, even though they may be under some kind of slavery system. But the Jews, they are also slaves, but they are also under different type of system. They are not treated the same. So what happened? You can read the first part of Exodus, why they are so not happy. Because they said, you have to build a lot of big building in Egypt, you know. So they used the Jews to do that. But they want, because they grow so large in number now, in population, they try to control them. They try to give them a hard time. So the king at that time said, now you have to make bricks to build building. But I don't give you any more straw. You look for your own straw, but you still make bricks. But of course, bricks with mud without straw just fall apart. They don't hold very well. So it's much harder to do. That is how Moses came into being in the Old Testament. Moses exists supposedly in the Exodus times around 1500, 1400 BC. I would say about 400 years or so after Joseph's time. So the next character or personality I want to share with you is Moses. You all know about the story of Moses, right? He's a great person. He was mentioned in the in his book of faith record about what he did. But you know what? He also had his Achilles heel, his weakness. I just share with you three episodes in his life that I think point to his weakness. I believe that Moses is a very, very is a person who is full of enthusiasm to the point that he has an uncontrollable anger. When he was 40 years old, remember, he was living in the Pharaoh's house. But he went out there one day and he saw an Egyptian and a Jew was fighting. So he was so angry that he killed the other person and he buried him. You can read it in if you are interested in that, you can go back and read about it. In the Exodus, the first part of Exodus, chapter 2, you'll be reading about that story, how he killed this person, killed the Egyptian. So because of that, the Pharaoh is angry, so he has to flee. So he left his position of loyalty, and I think he went to a place called Midian. And he was there for 40 years getting trained. Getting sober, getting, you know, how to mature, you know, become a mature person. Then after that 40 years, remember, God called him and he wants him to be the leader, to lead the slaves out of Egypt. And that's how the Exodus journey starts. So you read about Moses, you can learn a lot from Moses in leadership, have to deal with this million of people that he had to take out of Egypt. It's a big task. God made use of him. But there are two other areas that I think Moses actually he was so up related to his personality, to his anger. When God gave him the Ten Commandments, you remember? He went up there, he gave him the Ten Commandments in two tablets. So he came out of the mountain, came down, and he saw those people making a big rally against God, getting angry, you know. You read the story about the golden calf and so forth. And Moses was so angry, he threw those tablets down and broke all of them. They broke both of them. He couldn't control himself. He threw them down. God wrote those there at the Ten Commandments. He gave it to him. He was supposed in leadership. He was so angry, he couldn't control him, threw them down. So God has to write another two to have to duplicate the tablet. God is very graceful. Instead of scolding him, giving him, he said, you know, take this second verse, you know, copy it, and you start this Ten Commandments. You teach the people about my law, Ten Commandments. That was a very significant part. I think we can read. That is his failure, his weakness. And you know, the last time he he proved of this anger and uncontrollable temper is when he missed entry into Canaan. Moses was about 120 years old. They are now have Canaan in mind. You can see across the mountain now. This promised land is all over there. And he's supposed to lead the whole group of people to go into Canaan. But you know, just before that, the people was complaining again about Moses. He said, we are thirsty, we are thirsty, we are in desert, we don't have enough water to drink. Now, this happened before too, so as God asked him to do, to talk to the rock, to command the rock to give water. And this time, God specifically told Moses, said, speak to the rock, speak to the rock, and it will give you water. And so Moses faced this cloud, a million people or so, and they were so angry, they said that, you know, we don't have water. Moses lost his temper. The Bible said that he hit the rock real hard twice. God said, God didn't tell him, hit the rock. God said, you speak to the rock. You have the power to speak to the rock. The water will come out. But Moses took over. He was so angry, he hit the rock. And it's hard to understand why God makes such a severe punishment to Moses because of that. But I think it showed that we don't know what is in Moses' mind at that time, but certainly he was very angry with his people, even though the promised land is already in sight. But God said, because you didn't follow me, you didn't respect my order, you cannot go into Canaan. You can see it. I'll take you up to the mountain. You can see it across the mountain, the promised land. But you're going to die here, not in Canaan. So this is Moses, actually is here. But he still belonged to the book of faith in his record. Why? Because God understands. As human beings, we have our Achilles heel. We have our moment when we try to take over, try to take control in our life, and it didn't work. But God is gracious to us. God continued to love us, lead us away. And he continued to choose and make his way of getting his plan done. There's one other person I want to share with you, and that is David. You all know about David in the Bible. I don't have to tell you the story. He started out from a little kid, but he was a very strong person. He was strong enough, he was able to kill the lion to protect his sheep. He was able to kill Goliath. God chose him. God uses David. His life represents somebody that God input a lot of gifts to fulfill God's plan for Israel. Another thing that I didn't think about much recently is that beside David being a very strong person, beside the fact that he is a strong military man after he became king, conquered a lot of nations, David also is quite a well-rounded person. The Bible said he played the harp real well. He's a very musical person. He was gifted in art. He wrote a lot of poems. He wrote a lot of songs. So he was a very musical person. He's a very well-rounded person. But in spite of that gift, there are also actually he was a king with those gifts, I suppose. I think David, something I couldn't quite understand, but I think he might be quite a sentimental, a sensuous person. At the height of his rule, when he had everything under control, he didn't have to be in a battle anymore. He was up in his own castle, relaxing. He went up to the roof one day, I don't know why, but he may be a little bored. He went up in the booth while the other people were hardworking, fighting, and so forth. And he looked across and he saw this beautiful lady, Bethesda. The Bible says she's beautiful. And David was attracted to her. And David was very powerful. So he sent somebody to this girl. He said, why don't you send this girl over? And this girl was married to a military person under David. And the story goes that David took her as his wife, and they have a son from her. Now, David is at a point that he's so powerful that he didn't realize that something wrong he did. Now, Nathan is a very important prophet during David's time. And through that, Nathan talked to David and advised David a lot during the time, because he was God media to David. So not only David took this girl his wife, but because this girl has a husband who is in military under David's control. And David tried his human trick. He said, try to ask this Bethesda husband to go back to her so that he can stay with her and live with her and sleep with her. So that if she has a child, nobody can blame David, because this is from her own husband, right? Who knows? They don't have genetic testing at that time. They can't tell which one is coming from which person. That's the way of human way of doing it, you know. So she tried to persuade this person, you know, you don't have to go to battle anymore. You go back and spend time with your wife. But this person was so honorable, he wanted to be doing his job, so he didn't do it. So I suppose when he found out that Bethesda was pregnant, what are you going to do? If the husband had not been there for a while, how come she became pregnant? So some explanation has to be done, right? So one way of David doing it is he sent this person to battle, and he was killed in battle. David wasn't aware of that. So Nathan told David a story about somebody who has, you know, a goat. That person is it's only one goat that he depend on. It's his lifeline. So Nathan used this story to tell David, you know, what are you doing? You have plentiful. Why do you have to do something like that? And David was very angry when he heard this story. He was still not conscious of the sin he had performed. But you know, later when it was pointed to him, he was really sorrowful. I cannot get a lot of reflection from the Bible about the other characters that have their downfall because of their fault and the ugly heels. I think one lesson we can learn from David is from the hymns and the psalm he wrote afterwards, how sorrowful he was asking God for forgiveness in his life. God was very graceful. God actually told David, he said, I'm not going to punish you during your lifetime as such, but you're going to suffer because of this mistake you made. You're descending into suffering. Your kingdom is going to fall apart. God will not let David build his temple, because the Bible says he's a military person, but I think also because he has failed in this era, and this because of this episode, and Solomon took over. I did not share about Solomon today, but Solomon also fall in the same kind of situation in terms of his Achilles heel. And we don't have time for that about Solomon. But I'll end this with David. Let's just share with you in my mind what God have taught me recently when I prepare for this sharing today. It's telling me that all human beings have faults. All human beings have the weak point, no matter how good, how strong, how successful they are in their leadership. And I reflect at this time of the year, the last part of this year, just a few days left, for the past year, what does this kind of lesson has for me spiritually? We have not read any Bible verses. I'd like Chen Sang to come out. I hope he's not sleeping. I hope he's meditating. Chen Sang, will you come up here? And I know I've not been fair because I have been talking all this time in English. David, after his sin, he became very sorrowful. He asked God for forgiveness. He wrote the 51st Psalm. I feel this is a psalm that all of us, when we look back at our own life, including looking back at our past year, our success, our failure, our frustration, so forth, or whether you have sinned against God or fellow man or not, I think this song is a good song for us to reflect on at this time of year. So I asked Jensen to read it in Chinese. For those of you who have English Bible, just read it in English. I'd like Jensen to read it. Would like to come out here to read Psalm 51. And it said, the heading is said, a Psalm of David. When the prophet Nathan came to him after David had committed adultery with Bethesda. Psalm 51. You'll read in Chinese.
愿许我按你丰盛的慈悲涂抹我的过犯求你将我的罪孽洗除求你将我的罪孽洗除净净并接受我的罪因为我知道我的过犯我的罪我的罪常在我面前我向你犯罪唯独得罪了你在你眼前行了这恶以致你责备我的时候显为公义 判断我的时候显为轻正我是在罪孽里生的在我母亲怀胎的时候就有了罪你所喜爱的是内里诚实你在我阴密处逼使我得智慧求你用牛膝草洁净我我就干净求你洗涤我我就比雪更白求你使我得听欢喜快乐的声音使你所压伤的骨头可以踊跃 求你掩面不认我的罪涂抹我一切的罪孽神啊求你为我造清洁的心使我里边重新有正直的灵不要丢弃我使我离开你的面不要从我收回你的圣灵求你使我能得救恩之乐赐我乐意的灵扶持我我就把你的道只叫有过犯的人罪人必归顺你 神啊，你是拯救我的神，求你救我脱离流人血的罪，我的舌头就高声歌唱你的公义。主啊，求你使我嘴唇张开，我的口便传扬赞美你的话。你本不喜爱祭物，若喜爱，我就献上燔祭，你也不喜悦。神所要的祭就是忧伤的灵。神啊，忧伤痛悔的心，你必不轻看。 求你随你的美意善待西安，建造耶路撒冷的城墙。那时，你必喜爱公义的祭和燔祭，并全身的燔祭。那时，人必将公牛献在你坛上。
You just stay up here, me. And I like the, I like Bob. Come and join me. Yeah. You know, this is the end of 2008, just a few more days left. And when I was preparing this sermon myself, I tried to ask God to talk to me what I learned from this. And I have shared in the past, if I want to share something with you in sermon, I want God first to teach me a lesson, and teach me first so I can share with you. And I can share with you that in reflection, at this time for the past year, I certainly have to admit in front of God, I have many area of failures. Things that I wish I have prevented, things maybe because either knowingly or unknowingly, I have offended people. I have sinned against God. A lot of time, we are aware of it. We went ahead because of our personality. A lot of time, we are not knowingly aware of it because why? As I said earlier, we may not know exactly what our Achilles heels are, not to the detail. So at this time, just to share you this year-end reflection and sharing, I'd like to ask you a few questions. How many of you were discouraged because you did not have a productive year? Not the way you have hoped for. Or else, you did not develop as meaningful a relationship either with family or friends so far like you want to this year when you look back. You might regret about it because you have not tried hard enough to do so. How many of you have felt guilty because you have hurt somebody in there? Somebody's life, knowingly or unknowingly, the past year. But you are conscious of it, maybe. Sometimes, maybe even you are not conscious that you have hurt somebody in their life. How many of you were disappointed because you did not get what you want this past year? You might have been disappointed in God and disappointed in somebody because your expectation failed. It came to fruition. Or you feel disappointed because you trusted in somebody and you were disappointed because you did not get what you expect. At this time, I like to share myself in front of you. This is not a time when I'm saying that we're going to write down a lot of new resolution. I'm going to do this next year. I'm going to do this, or a list of them. I just want to present in front of you. As a person, I also ask God to examine me. With this question in reflection in mind, ask God for forgiveness and ask God to strengthen us. Like he did with all the important characters in the Bible, with Adam, with Abraham, with Joseph, with Moses, with David, a lot other that is recorded in the Bible. All of them have their faults, have their Achilles heel, but God loved all of them. I suppose that Paul, if he had time, he thought long enough, and I'm not Paul, the writer of Hebrew, thought long enough, he would have put more people in that list. And if he had written Hebrew nowadays, I'm sure that chapter 11 of Hebrew will be so long, you need to have the computer to start it. And it could include any one of us. So at this time, I'd like to share with you, being myself in front of you, that if any of you want to come out and pray with us together, if you have the same feeling as I do, that you want God to be in charge of your life and help you, to protect you from the Achilles heel against the attack of Satan in the coming year, I'd like you to come and join me here at this time in front, that we can pray together. I'll give you a few minutes and ask those who want to join us. And I'm going to have Bob to give us a closing prayer and pray for all of us. You'll give a few more minutes and see who wants to come out and join us.
Actually, I've got a song that's pretty fitting if Stephanie would play for me. You know, I really thank God that he can use these men, the men like Paul who persecuted Christians, like David and like Moses who killed people. When I've witnessed the gospel to some, the question they ask me is, well, can God forgive me? I said, if God can forgive someone for killing, I think God can forgive you. He can forgive murderers. And his forgiveness is really awesome. Stephanie, if you would. Give thanks with a grateful heart. Give thanks unto the Holy One. Give thanks because he's given Jesus Christ his Son. Give thanks with a grateful heart. Give thanks unto the Holy One. Give thanks because he's given Jesus Christ his Son. And now let the weak say, I am strong. Let the poor say, I am rich, because of what the Lord has done for us. And now let the weak say, I am strong. Let the poor say, I am rich, because of what the Lord has done for us. Give thanks. Give thanks. And now let the weak say, I am strong. Let the poor say, I am rich, because of what the Lord has done for us. And now let the weak say, I am strong. Let the poor say, I am rich, because of what the Lord has done for us. Give thanks. Give thanks.